This is Polymnia. The big one here is Polymnia rubidale. There we go. We have two Polymnias. One is Polymnia rubidale, which is the old official drug plant. And the other one is Polymnia canadensis, which is about half the size. Now this larger one here, it's just a big, huge dandelion-like leaves that grow off a stem. Annual growth, but a perennial plant. And it's also called American bearsfoot. That's the other name it's known as. It's also called Ubedalia in some books. Like they call Argentine Lapa, because they want to confuse people in the next century. It's a composite, and its closest relatives will be the Silphiums, S-I-L-P-H-I-U-M. These plants grow in the Ozarks, in Mason-Dixon area, not too far up Appalachia, southern Appalachia, and is often a roadside weed, but it's a native plant. The Polymnia rubidale gets 3, 4, 5, 6 feet tall, big coarse leaves. It grows to the edges of clearings, and you'll notice that the leaves have wings on them. See? The stems, the petioles, are winged. You recognize the... I cannot recognize it. But over here, same thing here. The stem, and then those are the two opposite leaves, and the petioles are winged. You get that? There's a little membrane up and down the stems. The leaf stems. And it's a big, coarse plant with little funny yellow flowers. And this is Polymnia canadensis, and a tired herbalist. It's hot there, you know? Jeez. Okay. Polymnia rubidale is a lymphatic and a spleen and liver stimulant. It used to be used for, I don't know, typhus, malaria, stuff like that. But it is, I don't know, I haven't used it too much in recent years just because I keep forgetting about it, but lymphatic congestion with a lot of deficiencies, visceral deficiencies, not very good blood, tend to be a little anemic, tend to have upper and lower GI deficiency with congestion, tend to spiky blood sugar and sort of an apple tummy, a pot belly, and a fair amount of flaccid fluff fat. Okay. Now, you may be a small pocket version of that, but also in, say, mononucleosis, where there's enlarged liver and enlarged spleen, this will bring the spleen down. It used to be a specific splenic medicine, but it's actually a fairly hot and strong-moving lymphatic when there's lymphatic congestion as part of circulatory deficiency. You're sluggish, your blood doesn't move real good, and you're cardiovascular deficient in general. So this is a stagnation herb. How's that? It's not a primary herb, but it's a strong influence. If you do too much, we can get kind of sick from it. It's sort of like iris, and the large quantities make you exhausted. Actually, it don't make you exhausted so much as hot and agitated. But it's an herb for chronic stagnation, generally in the inactive person. and usually with swollen tonsils, if you still got them, congested lymph nodes in the armpits, and just sluggish lymphatics in general. What's happening? There's something that's happening. I sensed it. Anybody ever heard of polymnia?
No.
That's what I thought. Well, it would, the eclectics lived and died with it. Yes? Yeah. It was used basically for pseudotyphus and typhus, and with some success, particularly in the prison camps. Because Civil War prison camps, I mean, prison war, I don't know what there is glamorous about the army, because the dog soldier is treated like absolute crap in every war by every army, and they're just cannon fodder or I don't know, one of those big things that throw out the catapult fodder, and it's just, you know, and particularly the Civil War Confederate camps had a lot of sickness. Probably half the soldiers in the prisoner camps died of pollution of typhus instead of typhus. And John King was pretty much the charismatic founder of the eclectic movement, was a Civil War surgeon, and found this immensely useful for the typhus outbreaks, which entailed incredible Peyer's patch congestion and this rice water diarrhea, and this would just bring it back it around. Also, he had an awful lot of splenomegalies as a result of these various infections, like typhus, pseudotyphus, and blackwater fever, which was going around then, and periodic yellow fevers, and enlarged spleens are one of the things that happens when enlarged liver is enough. And had pretty good luck in mono as well. I would use it with red root, which red root is astringent and tonic to the structure of the lymph system. Remember the old model that you're born with a lymph system and you have to populate it with lymph cells from the thymus. You're born with bone marrow and thymus, and they make the lymph cells that go populate the empty lymph system. The lymph system is empty at birth. Lymph nodes are empty houses. So it takes about 6 months or more to proliferate from the bone marrow, program in the thymus, and then populate the lymph nodes. And red root is tonic to the structure of the lymph tissue. That includes spleen, that includes adenoids, Peyer's patches, lymph tissue. But the lymph cells, this is a stimulant too. So this stimulates the functional cells of the lymph system. Red root is tonic and tightens up the structure of the household, the people living in the lymph system. So they're rather complementary. Red root with a little bit of polymnia will get rid of most lymphadenitis, that kind of stuff. Good for splenomegaly, where the spleen is enlarged. Now, you don't go palpating an enlarged spleen too much. So you can go kind of whoop, splatter. You know, this is splatter stuff. But an enlarged spleen as a result of usually infected liver, or in the case of mono, goes to the liver first, then to the spleen. And you may be over the infection, but it takes months for the liver and the spleen to shrink down to normal size. And red root with polymnia is a good way to do it, to shorten time. Anyway, here's, there's the insect. So there's the big polymnia vidalia, and the inset is the little one, polymnia canadensis. Interchangeable. And remember that the flowers are little yellow puffy things, and they smell like heaven. Here's this funny little grunty octopus plant growing in the shade in leaf chuff, or growing in the side of the road to the campground, the egg things, you know, the two species. And the flowers, we collected a bunch of it, and in fact, it was near the Whitewater, Arkansas. It grows in cliffs and rock faces. And we had a bunch together and just almost fainted from the smell of the flower. It was just intoxicating. It was sweet and aromatic and a little sexy and then even stronger. I had no idea. The only place I can think of is the Berkelia grandiflora and botanicifolia that grows up in Old Bisbee. When it goes to flower, it has little purple droopy flowers, and they're like jasmine. Well, this is like that, but it's even sweeter. It's just like a little girl's perfume. It's just, did I forget anything?
No, I think you talked about how it grew on top.
Yeah. Well, it grows right in the leaves. Likes shady limestone surfaces, and it just fills up whole hillsides sometimes. Yeah, it's peculiar. The bigger one is grosser, and you tend to find it around old towns and old Amarco filling stations from the 30s with funny little things in the glass. But then that's more over Tennessee and Mason-Dixon. Not as common in the western Appalachia, but anyway. The bear's foot is supposed to be a hair stimulant. The eclectics made a tonic for it. They boiled it up in bear grease in the old days, and when bears sort of went away, in hog grease. And they made a salve to use as a hair ointment. This actually was official and fairly widely used. Of course, obviously you don't care. But you put this greasy stuff in your hair, and you basically get like a big bunch of polymnia, and you do three or four heatings to the point of early carbonization, pull it out, cool it down, heat it up again, put another batch of herb until it got really green-brown and really evil, and you put that in your hair. I'm surprised they didn't work that into Brother Where Art Thou.
The root?
Huh? They use the root, but the whole plant as a medicine is equal. They use barefoot root, but the whole plant works. That flower smell wouldn't last with this kind of grease bath. You're basically using, you know, there's a few things that do heat well, and this was basically prepared in large vats of lard, heated up, and the herb kept in it, the herb and the root especially, until just begin to carbonize and then removed and turned off. If you go too much, it'll go on fire, of course. That was the way they made it. Then they would add benzoic acid to preserve it from getting rancid. I mean, that was freshly rendered hog lard. Now, try to get freshly rendered hog lard in North America outside of a Hutterite farm or some Mennonite farm. You know, you're not going to get it. It's a substantial medicine. You can't buy it anywhere. I don't think I have any distribution maps for it. No, I don't. So there. But it's actually a fairly important medicine.